This is Jack's Journal, an in-depth look at local issues that affect you and your community.
Hey there, and welcome to Jack's Journal, and I'm Danielle Lee. As each day passes, we get one day closer to the 2016 Election Day. This is definitely a road to the White House to remember, and it has been quite interesting. I am so excited to bring a guest I had on the show earlier this year, and that's Dr. Michael Bender, an assistant political science professor from the University of North Florida. Last time we talked about millennials and voting. Welcome back to the show, Mike. How are you today?
I'm doing well. Thanks for having me back.
Oh, no problem. So first things first, for our first-time listeners, can you give our audience a rundown about what you do over at University of North Florida?
So I'm a professor in the political science department, but I also am the faculty director of the Public Opinion Research Lab, and we are a full-service survey agency. We do a lot of public opinion research that involves political as well as non-political aspects, but also we do work for private companies. We do work for the state. So if you need a survey done, come talk to us.
All right. And we're definitely going to get back with that a little bit later. So last time we talked, I mentioned I wasn't a big fan of politics in college and high school.
But we turned you around.
Yes, turning me around. If we could turn back time. So here I am asking you to really simplify something for me once again. And that is, what is a contested convention?
The short answer is it's not particularly simple. So this is obviously in the news because of the Republican Party and the idea that it's possible that one of the leading candidates might not get to the required majority number of delegates in order to be the nominee. And what happens if you get to the convention, but 1237 is the magic number if Donald Trump doesn't get to 1237? It's complicated, and there is, believe it or not, there's a lot of uncertainty, and anybody that tells you that they know exactly what's going to happen is lying to you.
Oh, great. So I'm still trying to wrap my mind around this.
Okay.
So
even though all these primaries are going on and have been going on for months, the nominees aren't officially determined until the nominating conventions. This year, they're a little bit, they're in July because of the Olympics, so they don't want to contend with that.
Right.
At the conventions, there are these things called delegates. These people, these delegates are elected or appointed in various processes across different states. Who they are often depends on who wins enough votes in given states or given congressional districts. But these are the people that actually cast the ballot for who is going to be the nominee. The analogy would be the Electoral College for a general election. We go to the ballots in November, we vote, but then these people become appointed electors, and they're the ones that actually appoint the president. These delegates work just the same way. We vote in primaries, but then these delegates are the ones that are actually voting and casting ballots for who the nominee is going to be.
Okay. Makes a little bit more sense because I was clueless. Like I said, I looked up contested convention for dummies just not too long ago just to kind of brush up on the skills. How likely is this to happen? Is it something that happens often?
So here's the thing. I might not be the best person to ask, because if you would have asked me 6 months ago, I would have said it's crazy. There hasn't been a contested convention since they altered the way the primaries are run to avoid it. Heck, even, you know, several months back, I said no way. Heck, a month ago, 2 months ago, I said no way. But I think it's becoming much more likely that it will. Of the three remaining Republican candidates, John Kasich cannot get to 1237. There are simply not enough delegates left if he were to win every single one of them. Ted Cruz theoretically could get to 1237 if he won every single delegate going forward. However, assuming that Donald Trump stays in the race, that is not a realistic possibility. Donald Trump, he needs just under 500 delegates of the 845 that are left. It's possible, but looking more and more unlikely, and depending upon what happens in New York next week, could become a very steep hill for him to climb. So it's looking more like this is going to be either a contested convention or a multi-ballot convention or an open convention, whatever the whatever the lingo of the day is to describe it.
All right. Now, has this happened before? I don't know if this is before my time at all or this happened while I just wasn't aware. Has something like this happened?
Well, this was standard operating procedure until the 60s and 70s, and they completely changed how electing nominees would go. Historically, this is the way it was. You maybe had a couple of primaries, and then you showed up at the convention, and there was backdoor politicking, the old smoke-filled rooms. Mm-hmm. That's how candidates were determined. That changed. The Democrats kind of spearheaded that. They were unhappy with some of their selections in the early 70s. And now we've kind of gone to this process where primaries and voters are having much more influence.
Okay.
But this is not unprecedented, just not lately.
Okay. So what do you think? Let's talk about the Republican Party for a second. Do you think there is a path for Cruz, Trump, or Kasich to be the clear nominee at this point?
Not for Cruz or for Kasich. It's possible for Trump. It's very unlikely, I think. It's becoming more unlikely. So if this were to get to that contested convention position, what would happen is you'd have a ballot. And everybody would vote. And that first vote, most of these states' delegates are tied to the people they're supposed to vote for based on the results of the primaries. So think about the Electoral College, right? If you win Florida, you get all those delegates. If you have one ballot, all those delegates vote for the candidate they're supposed to vote for.
So
that
Jacqueline,
changes yes, if nobody gets to 1237. That second ballot, a lot of states do not require their delegates to vote a certain way. So they could theoretically vote for anybody with some caveats.
Right.
And at that point, a lot of different things can happen.
Okay. What about, let's switch over to the Democratic. The Democratic side. What about for Clinton or Sanders to be the clear nominee? Do they have a chance with a contested convention or what do you think?
I think it would be absent an indictment or something crazy happening. Hillary Clinton really has this nomination sewn up. Bernie Sanders won a handful of states very close in the last couple of weeks. Hillary Clinton has a very large advantage in all delegates, but she has enough of an advantage even in just pledged delegates that she will get to the majority number required prior to a convention. And I don't think that it's necessarily going to be close going forward, even though some of these elections are just because of the way the delegates are allocated on the Democratic side.
All right. Now, I've been keeping up at work. It's kind of my job now, but I'm curious about what you think. What has surprised you so far in this road to the White House election?
Oh, nothing. This
really?
Election. No, I'm kidding. Of course. this election has been insane. Not that they're not typically surprising, but this is just ridiculous. The idea that a avowed Democratic socialist is winning states for in the Democratic primaries and challenging one, forget whether you like Hillary Clinton or not. If you just look at her resume, former Secretary of State, former Senator, former First Lady. A resume that's really unprecedented when running for president. I was thinking back some of the previous ones. Maybe you could say when the first Bush ran, having been vice president, head of the CIA and stuff. But it's been a while since you had a resume of a president that looked like hers.
Mm-hmm.
Being challenged by this wacky, left of left senator from Vermont. Is crazy to me. It shows that, maybe Hillary isn't a great candidate, but it's really surprising. And then on the Republican side, Donald Trump completely obliterated any sense of what was going to possibly happen going forward. He changed the game, and his celebrity status and his persona have really altered the Republican political landscape. Yes, it's important what happens in 2016, and I don't want to diminish this, but the really interesting thing is what happens going forward. What does this do to the Republican Party? What if he doesn't get to 1237? He goes to Cleveland to the convention and doesn't come away with the nomination. Does he take his ball and go home and threaten to blow up the Republican Party?
Who knows?
Who knows, right? Knows? Does he play nice? Probably not. You know, okay, what if he wins the nomination? What does that do to the Republican Party? Because there are people that are literally fearful of Donald Trump being president in the Republican Party.
Right.
What does that do? So the future of the Republican Party is really uncertain right now.
All right. And I want to talk about Donald Trump to you right now. You know, him running was, you know, everybody was just like, no, he's not going to. And then now he is. And he has quite a big fan base. What is he doing that is just, do you think it's his celebrity status? What do you think is making Donald Trump successful right now?
Well, a couple of things. One, the celebrity status absolutely helped early on in the game. He had complete name recognition before this whole process even started. That advantages you tremendously. The other advantage that he's gotten is the free media. He has been on every single channel, every single TV show constantly.
Right.
Unlike a John Kasich or a Ted Cruz or a Marco Rubio or a Jeb Bush. So he's been advantaged in that regard. But he has also sparked something in a segment of the Republican Party. This sense that America's getting kicked around and we need to stand up for ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
This also working on and focusing on the other, whether that's illegal immigrants, whether it's China, whether it's whatever the other is, you know, this fear of the other and galvanizing that fear and concern among people. So there's certainly a lot going on with it. And some of it was happenstance, his celebrity, right? I don't think he planned to do The Apprentice and be this guy on TV with the plan to run in 2016. I think it evolved to that. But the idea that he is just this idiot just kind of flandering around is not right either. The man's a smart man. He's, you know, made money, lost money, made some more money.
Right.
But he's learning. He's a little bit better of a candidate now than he was 8 months ago, maybe. But it'll be interesting to see how this plays out, especially if he gets the nomination, just from an observer standpoint.
Okay. Now, the last time we talked, I mean, we definitely had a Rubio, we had a Bush and a Carson in the race. And all gone. Did that surprise you at all?
The fact that Carson was gone, it didn't surprise me in the least. You didn't think that both Jeb and there was enough room for both Jeb and Marco. You thought that one of them would fall. But the fact that they're both gone is certainly, you know, not what you would have expected. You know, even, you know, 8 months ago, Jeb was the guy. And then even 3 months ago, Marco's the guy.
Right.
And now nobody's the guy.
Nobody. All right. Any endorsements that they've been given out lately just took you by surprise at all?
I'm from Jersey. I grew up in New Jersey.
Okay.
I was a little taken back by the Christie endorsement of Trump.
And what
happened in the immediate aftermath of that, and how strange it was in so many ways. And that really kind of caught me. And then the other one that got me was when Ben Carson withdrew, and Ben Carson endorsed Trump, and he really indicated that it was almost a tit for tat in that, you know, Trump had potentially promised him a place in the administration for his endorsement, which is illegal in this country, and you're not allowed to do that, and that's a crime. But it spoke to a couple of things. It spoke to, you know, what happens behind the scenes in politics, and also spoke to Carson's naivete about how the process actually works. And I think that was, you know, a big part of his appeal, but also a big part of his downfall.
All right. Let's talk about UNF real quick. I don't know how classes work there, but as Election Day gets closer, are you doing something different in your classes with that group you're in charge of?
So a lot's going on. Well, we're wrapping up the spring semester now, and we have a couple of summer classes. Over the summer, the Public Opinion Research Lab is going to be doing a countywide survey about the August primary. August 30th is the statewide primary. This is where folks like the newly opened congressional seat that Andrew Crenshaw was in. That will be contested, potentially the primary for Congressional District 5, Kareem Brown's old seat. Uh-huh. And also, more importantly for Duval residents, the extension of the half-cent tax that would be dedicated to the police and fire pension fund. That ballot measure will be on the ballot, it looks like, on August 30th. So we're going to poll ahead of that. And then as we lead into November, obviously, you know, political science classes are going to be focused on that. And we're going to be integrating that information into our classes. We'll be doing a survey in the fall statewide about Florida and where they stand on the presidential race and things of that nature. But we'll be busy for the next several months.
I'm thinking, like, if I was still in college, being in a political science atmosphere would be so interesting right now, because so much is happening.
And ironically, the great thing about political science and our discipline is it's not just 2016, right?
Right.
Think back a year ago, we're talking about the mayor's race and how, and then a year before that was the governor's race.
Yeah.
So there is something all the time going mm-hmm. on in politics, and you know, just wait a couple of months and something else is on the horizon.
Exactly. Now I'm thinking back to what we've talked about so far, how I didn't know what contestant convention was. Thank you mm-hmm. for that. And I'm just thinking, what if we have other audiences that are listening right now that's not quite sure of some of these words that we've been using?
Sure.
You mentioned Electoral College. The only reason I know what Electoral College was because of Schoolhouse Rock.
All right. Schoolhouse Rock will do it too.
Yeah.
So, I love Schoolhouse Rock for how a bill becomes a law.
Exactly. So can you explain what Electoral College is for those that may not understand what
it is? So we don't directly vote for our presidents.
Right.
We vote essentially by state. And each state then sends delegates or electors to then go nominate and ultimately vote for the president. The Electoral College is on a state-by-state basis. Again, some of these states are a little bit different, but typically it's a winner-take-all circumstance. You get uh-huh. the most votes in a state, you get all of the delegates for that state or all the electors. The uh-huh. electors are determined by the amount of congressional districts you have, plus two for representing your two senators. Uh-huh. So a total of 537 folks. You then go and these people go and they vote for the president. And that's how we actually get a president. These folks are not legally necessarily required to vote for the state candidate or who the state voted for.
Mm-hmm.
They typically do, but there have been circumstances where they have not. So that's something.
Has that ever happened before?
Not to the point where it's turned an election.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, 30, 40 years ago, there were some southern states that voted for Strom Thurmond back in the day when he was a Dixiecrat. There was talk and fear of that happening in 2000 with the contested Gore and Bush election. It didn't happen, mostly because the people that get appointed are representatives of the parties and they tend to support their own party types.
Understood. Well, I think that's all the questions I have for this time around. I'm sure there'll be big words that I'm like, definitely should give him a call. Anything else you would like to add before we go?
Just real quick, back to this convention thing. Right before the convention starts, the rules are determined. The rules that people are talking about for how this is going to work is based on 4 years ago in 2012. Uh-huh. Every convention starts and they make their own rules literally. Typically, it's a framework that's similar to the last time, but the specifics of who can get nominated, if there's requirements about potential names that could get thrown in, all that stuff is determined literally the first day of the convention. So 4 years ago, there was a rule that was put in place that said you had to win the majority votes in 8 states in order to be considered.
Uh-huh.
That may not be here this time. It may or it may not. And based on what happens in those rules, that will give you a good sense about who might be advantaged if this doesn't get sewn up, if somebody doesn't get that 1237.
Awesome. Well, thank you. 1237 is the magic number.
Magic number.
From that. Well, thank you so much for coming in today, Mike. I really appreciate it. Always great time talking to you.
Hey, thanks for having me.
No problem. And a huge thanks to all of you for listening. Once again, this is Jack's Journal, and I am Danielle Lee. We will talk again same time next week.
You've been listening to Jack's Journal, a production of News 104.5 WOKV.